Now, the Australian Dingo Foundation and its sanctuary and research was established in 2006 by Peter and Lynn Watson. The foundation campaigns for the dingo as a species, and we're lucky enough to be joined by Lynn Watson to find out more about this fantastic organisation and their work. Lynn, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Now, first of all, how did Peter and yourself come to establish the foundation? How did you become interested in dingo welfare?
Well, we both had a very long history in purebred dogs, and my history in purebred dogs goes back even prior to my teens, when all I really ever wanted was a dingo.
Wow.
Couldn't own a dingo those days, and so had a substitute in the purebred dogs, which I bred with great success, and I do I've qualified to judge every breed that's
wow.
recognised, and I do judge internationally. So I came into dingoes with that background, and Peter and myself both had a passion for our native dog. We could see almost nobody was doing anything for them.
Mm.
And in the early days, I did volunteer for a famous dingo personality in Bruce Jacobs, whom I had known as a competitor in the dog world many, many years previous. Anyway, you know, this is now going still back 30 years. And when we decided that we needed to go forward, get dingoes legally to be owned so that people weren't outside of the law if they were caring for dingoes, and that's the path we started on. Of course, we succeeded. My husband by this time was the first elected president of the Victorian Kennel Club.
Wow.
And together we presented a proposal to the Australian National Kennel Council in Darwin back in 1992 recognise the dingo as a breed of dog, which at that time we had no other way of knowing was not the case. Bruce was so excited when we succeeded with all of this, when we were able to go to our minister here in Victoria and get regulations approved for the ownership of dingoes, that he said, "Lynn, I've got no money. Here's two dingoes."
Oh, wow.
So that was where we ourselves started.
Mm.
And we learned a lot from Bruce's mistakes.
Mm.
And decided that that was not the way we were going to go. What we wanted to do was make the dingo respected species. We started to live with them. And honestly, it only took 2 weeks, 2 weeks of living with them, before I realised that we'd made a shocking mistake having them recognised as a breed of dog.
Really?
Because, in fact, they don't act like dogs. We could see from their behaviour, from the things they did, that they've never been dogs. They've never been domesticated. They're really a cat in a little dog suit.
Okay.
And so we set about reversing that breed business. But at the time, it was also very important for the Australian National Kennel Council to do something to protect our dingo internationally.
Mm.
Because at that time, the international kennel clubs were preparing to recognise a dingo as a show dog, because many of the European zoos had allowed puppies that were being born in their zoos to go to private owners. And these people were dog people and wanted to show the dogs. And the European Kennel Organisation was just on the verge of recognising the dingo as a breed developed in Switzerland.
Really?
Yeah, So it didn't take much convincing for us to get the Australian National Kennel Council to at least recognise the dingo as Australia's native dog.
That's incredible. It's incredible the journey that went on there, but trying to get the dingo recognised as a dog, then trying to reverse all the hard work that you'd done. Lynn, what are some of the biggest challenges that dingoes face today? How does the centre try and address these challenges too?
Well, the biggest challenge has always been the fear of what a dingo could do,
mm.
when in fact you put that against the truth and there's nothing to fear. For instance, let's just put it this way, using New South Wales agricultural figures, There is three times more stock loss attributed to crows than there are to wild dogs.
Wow, that shocks me.
Well, you won't be surprised at the fox figures, maybe, but there are 10 times more stock losses attributed to foxes than there are to wild dogs.
Goodness.
There are twice as many domestic dog stock losses as there are wild dog stock losses. So, in fact, when we whittle it all down, there's only 7% of the stock losses that can be attributed to the wild dog, and yet you could walk amongst any farming community and they'll tell you that the biggest scourge they've ever had is the dingo.
And so the foundation and the centre, what you're working to do is to try and readdress these misconceptions.
Well, we've been doing it for 30 years, and not having very much success at all, our tiny voice against a tsunami of paid propaganda. Because don't worry about it, but the rural lobby is a well-funded juggernaut, which we have no hope of matching financially or any other way. And so this propaganda, professional propaganda, comes out every year, every August, to say what all the terrible things that are going to happen. And when you go and try to really address the truth in the places that they're claimed, it's always figures snatched out of the air. When you ask for the figures on the success of baiting or what have you, there's no accountability to be found.
Which is an horrific thought, that there is no accountability and that these beautiful creatures are being unfairly or unjustly hunted.
Yes.
Now, for anyone out there who's listening and who's thinking, like me, that this is an atrocity, that these are obviously a national treasure, that the dingoes are a national treasure that need to be protected, what advice would you give to anyone out there listening?
Don't be afraid to go talk to whoever you vote for in your local parliament. Sit before them and tell them that you disapprove of this wholesale killing of dingoes. What's worse, we haven't had until the last few years the aerial baiting, which is so indiscriminate. And aerial baiting is dropping meat baits from the sky into our national parks. You know, this is a thing we should really hate, because the national parks belong to all of us. They do not belong to the farmers that live 3 kilometres across the way. They belong to all of us, and the things in the national parks. And, of course, the evidence that's mounting up now with beautiful peer-reviewed science, and it is a mountain in front of us now, shows quite clearly that where the dingoes are left alone, everything's better off. All of the wildlife's better off. Plants are better off. And farmers are better off because the dingoes do take care of the kangaroos, that are the biggest grass eaters, and which are the biggest competitors, in fact, for at least the sheep industry.
See, they are a native animal. They are a part of the native ecosystems that we find across our country. And so obviously they have a role to play. Obviously they're there for a reason, and they've survived for hundreds of thousands of years because of it. Lynn, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
No, my pleasure. Thank you, Jess.